Hi, I'm Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with a Slate spoiler special on Pineapple Express. Joining me is Tanner Colby. Hi, Tanner.
Hi, how's it going?
How should I identify you? You are a comedy writer. You're the author of the recent Chris Farley show.
Recent biography of the Chris Farley show.
And yes, and we saw Pineapple Express together 2 nights ago. Because I'm losing my voice a little bit and hoping that it sounds beguiling and husky, but I'm afraid it won't last. I'm going to throw it over to you for the plot summary.
A little bit convoluted for this movie. A little bit convoluted. It is a action stoner comedy produced by Judd Apatow and starring Seth Rogen and James Franco and directed, strangely enough, by David Gordon Green, who's known for thoughtful, pensive indie dramas like Snow Angels and All the Pretty Girls.
All the real girls, yes.
Well,
they were pretty, too.
Well, Zooey Deschanel, so that made me think, you know, pretty girls. Anyway, basic plot of the movie is that Seth Rogen, who has just picked up some really sick weed from his dealer, James Franco, called Pineapple Express is the name of the bud, while he's trying to serve a subpoena to this drug lord, he witnesses a murder, and the weed that he leaves at the scene allows the bad guys to trace him back to his dealer, and they set out on the lam. And what makes this sort of unique and new in the realm of stoner comedies is that the heart of it is less just about the wacky antics of getting high, but more about this relationship between the user and the dealer, which is fertile ground, I think, for comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of, you know, what place this occupies in the annals of stoner comedy, and we can get to that and some of the precedents in a minute, but I found that little bit of anxiety introduced by the fact that these buddies are not really buddies at the beginning, nor are they enemies in the sort of classic cop tradition, right, of the two partners who can't stand each other but come to love each other. Rather, they're a drug dealer and his client, which is this sort of faux friendship relationship.
Yeah, it's a transactional relationship that you make friendly just out of social necessity, but you really don't necessarily care for this other person.
And there's a wonderful scene before the action plot even kicks in at the beginning, sort of narratively static but very funny scene in which Rogan is sort of trapped in James Franco's apartment. He comes to get his bud. He gets the Pineapple Express. And then because James Franco's character, Saul, this drug dealer, is kind of needy and lonely, he basically ropes the guy into staying much longer than he wants to stay. And they get stoned together and sort of talk about nothing. And the whole time Rogan's sort of trying to leave, but also sort of starting to be charmed a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that relationship, the bromance, which is the new term that's been coined in Hollywood, of a romance between two men in a platonic buddy sort of way.
Do you know the origin of the term bromance?
I don't know the origin.
Suddenly hearing it everywhere.
I don't know the origin of the term bromance, but it's one of those words like manscaping that just sort of catches on.
So yeah, the bromance element is not necessarily new to the stoner comedy, but the extent to which it really is the center of the movie, at least for the first half, is, I think, somewhat unusual.
And the extent to which they stop and are somewhat sentimental about it. I mean, they kind of ground it in reality.
Oh, do you want to talk about the Butch Cassidy moment that we both love so much?
Well, yeah, there's a moment after they're on the lam, the two of them are in the woods and they're trying to hitchhike out to get a ride because they've slept for the night in his car and killed the battery. And they're both just high as kites. And they have this sort of musical montage scene, and it reminded me a lot of Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, where Paul Newman and Catherine Ross are riding around on the bicycle together. And it's just this fun little montage. They're like playing leapfrog and doing all these little games together, and it's very sweet.
And blowing pot smoke onto a caterpillar, this strange, almost Alice in Wonderland sort of reference.
Yeah, they're trying to get, like you would, you know, get your cat high or get your dog high. They're trying to like get a caterpillar high, which is just absurd, but it's just a really fun, sweet, tender moment. And that was, to me, exemplified the best of what the movie offered in terms of taking an outrageous stoner action shoot 'em up comedy and making these people real.
You were going to say, talk about where you think it falls in the great ranks of stoner comedies.
Well, I'm not necessarily a stoner comedy expert. I would definitely say that the Big Lebowski sort of stands unmatched in its being, you know, sort of the Citizen Kane of stoner comedies. That movie just took, you know, with The Dude and Walter and the adventure they go on, that movie just exists on a whole other level. And I actually didn't care for it the first time I saw it, but it's one of those movies every time you see it, and I've seen it maybe 20 times now, you just realize how brilliant it is. So this one certainly doesn't dethrone that, but it definitely, I think, offers more, or as sort of an evolution of the genre from Cheech and Chong and Half-Baked and movies that are funny if you're stoned, and the people who are making them are stoned, and therefore they think that the pot humor in them is really, really funny. And this one, I think it's a stoner comedy where the humor doesn't necessarily derive from the fact of being high.
Well, Apatow has said in interviews that, you know, a long time ago, before this movie was ever really conceived or written, he just sort of thought, what would it be like in an action movie if the action heroes were stoned the whole time? That was sort of the base gag that the whole thing grew out of.
Right, and I think it's really smart because most action movies and chase movies rely on a series of really sort of stupid and illogical and incoherent mistakes on the part of the protagonist. And here, all of those mistakes make sense because these guys are stoned out of their minds.
Right. The problem for me is that, unfortunately, I just didn't think the movie was tightly scripted and the action was sort of woven coherently enough with the bromance and the stoner plot that we really see why they're making all those mistakes. I mean, it certainly is motivated by the fact that, you know, they're these dumb fuck-ups who are high all the time.
Right.
But you don't sort of see how step by step they get themselves into this total mess. I want to go back and talk about the performances at the end, but let's talk about the mess they do get themselves into. Because, I mean, if part one of this movie, which to me is the charming part and the part that works, is, you know,
right,
the romantic bromance of the two sort of sweet-souled stoners, part two is this almost Tarantino-esque, really over-the-top, gory and violent action movie.
Right. And I think the whole point of a stoner comedy is that the plot isn't supposed to matter, and the plot doesn't really matter here, and yet they've completely overplotted it. You've got
two sets of villains, for one thing.
You've got two sets of villains. You've got the bad guys, Gary Cole and Rosie Perez, who were involved in the murder in the beginning. They're at war with a Chinese drug gang, and you've got
Korean,
sure. You've got at least a dozen Korean bad guys of various stripes who are after the other drug gang, and then
who are all just sort of undifferentiated, you know, total yellow peril stereotypes from
some Chop Saki
movie.
Yeah, they're not developed at all. Then you have Rogan's girlfriend and her parents in this whole subplot that's just sort of dropped halfway through the movie.
We forgot to mention that Seth Rogen is going out with a girl who's still in high school, even though his character is supposed to be 26. That's a little bit of a creepy element in the movie.
Yeah, I think I'd chalk that up as a misfire. It's supposed to like represent the fact that Rogan's character is a loser, that he's dating a girl who's still in high school, but it comes off more as just sort of incongruous and creepy, I think.
The girl is also dropped from the movie. I mean, as long as we're spoiling, the girl disappears from the movie in this completely non-committal way. It's a very odd end to that story. Obviously, this movie is not really interested in any story involving women. But
right. You know, women are pretty irrelevant. And I got to say, looking back on my high school years, all the girls that I knew from high school who were dating the skeezy 25-year-old guy, they didn't look like her. She was like standard Hollywood blonde attractive. And most of the girls that I know who went down that road in high school, they were attractive, but in sort of like the slutty, trashy kind of way.
Yeah, you need to know what's going to motivate a high school girl to go out with the sort of schlubby, unambitious
process server
who's stoned all day long.
Yeah, and she should have been much more, I can't think of an actress off the top of my head that I would insult by tarring with that brush, but she needed to be a little more trashy, I think.
Skeeze it up.
Yeah. Then it would have been, that would have been keeping it realistic because James Franco's character was brilliant. And Danny McBride, who played one of the other drug dealers, a guy named Red, who sort of just moves the plot along. Those were both brilliantly trashy guys, I think. And the girlfriend in that regard was just thoroughly underdeveloped.
I mean, I would make the more general observation that Apatow's movies tend to do exactly that, to have really carefully differentiated comic types among the men. Knocked Up, I think, had the same thing. And a somewhat generic vision of women, even when he's trying to tell the women's stories, as he does in Knocked Up more than here.
Yeah.
So did you think, we may disagree on this when we're talking about stuff that doesn't work, did you find the violence of the final climactic, very long and confusing action sequence as disproportionate to the tone of the movie as I did? I felt kind of grossed out by the fact that suddenly we were kind of watching guts flying everywhere.
Yeah, it was too.
Not that I mind guts for guts' sake, but it just didn't go with the movie.
To me, the volume of it and the protracted nature of the battle scene, there's like five different climaxes in the battle scene. To me, that was more of a problem than the goriness. If you just had a very, very small circumscribed amount of gore, I think that might have worked better.
There was a weird combination of, you know, an Apatowian desire to sort of be warm and sweet and let everybody be a real character, which is something that is really nice about his comedies, right? Even the sort of side characters always get their say. And there's a great little small part here of a thug, one of the sort of henchmen for Gary Cole, who's played by Craig Robinson, who also, you pointed out, played a similar role as the bouncer in Knocked Up.
Right.
A guy who's sort of on the sidelines and who initially comes off as sort of a bad guy, right? And then who gets his say and is actually sort of a sweet-souled person whose feelings are very easily hurt. So this guy who the movie spent, you know, a fair amount of time, I mean, every one of his scenes, he gets at least a couple lines that make us like him, meets this ignominious end where he's bashed to death by the Daewoo car belonging to Danny McBride.
Yeah, that was incongruous. We didn't.
And there's a kind of horrible shot of him that's supposed to be comic that I found really sad, where he's all mushed under the car.
Right, and they shoot his foot off.
Oh, that's right. And then just randomly after he's dead in a scene of just almost like Michael Madsen from Reservoir Dogs, kind of pure sadism, half of his foot is shot off by one of our three leads that we're supposed to care about.
Yeah, he was too he should have been the bad guy who maybe comes around in the end, because he was a totally sympathetic character and you liked him. Whereas Rosie Perez and Gary Cole, the two main bad, obviously they're meant to get their comeuppance.
Right, we see them kill someone in cold blood, and they're sort of more typical villains. But still, I mean, even for them, I just felt like the body count is really high by the end of this movie.
It is, and that was they sort of got away from, I think, the fun, really almost sweet and earnest tone at the beginning of this relationship with Rogan and Franco. And then right after the crazy shoot 'em up, where we've just watched 30 people get their heads blown off and get mowed down by cars, we go to a diner and we go right back to the touching bromance. And it's a little jarring. It feels a little tacked on, but at least we're glad that they got back to what was good about the movie to finish it out.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, so that we can kind of finish it out on what's good about the movie. I mean, I think we would both walk out saying, yes, I'd recommend this movie to friends,
well,
right?
I would recommend this movie to friends. And also, just given where we are this summer, so far the big comedies this summer have been Love Guru and Get Smart, neither of which really...
Yeah, given that Love Guru is the only other movie we had seen together up until the point that we saw this one, I would say there was at least a 500% increase in quality just right there.
Yeah, but just if you're looking for a comedy this summer, this one suffices, certainly.
Yeah, and even that loose, sloppy structure of the action plot not really making sense, it can all sort of be forgiven. It's all sort of part of the stoner fun to be had. This is not the kind of movie that needs to be super, super tight.
Exactly.
All right, well, thanks a lot for seeing the movie with me, Tanner, and
you got it.
Thanks for coming in for this late spoiler special.
All right.
For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.